This is the Poetry for Kids podcast. Today I'm speaking with Janet Wong, a children's author extraordinaire. Janet is the author of some 25 children's books and the anthologist of a new poetry series for kids called Poetry Tag Time. She's written poetry collections, novels in verse, picture books, edited anthologies, and I'm probably leaving something out here. Janet and I have known each other for, gosh, more than a dozen years now, since even before my first book was published. How are you doing today, Janet?
I'm doing great, Cam, thanks.
It's good to have you on. Now, Janet, I'm sure that you have told this story hundreds of times, but you have what I think is one of the most interesting stories of any children's author, of how you came to writing children's books. And I wonder if you would mind sharing that story one more time for my listeners, for readers who are new to your work.
Sure. Well, 20 years ago, I was a lawyer. I was director of labor relations at Universal Studios Hollywood. And my job was to negotiate union contracts, deciding how much money people would make, how many vacation days they could take. And when they did something bad, like the driver who put a snake in his boss's office. When they did something bad, they ended up in my office. And I was asked to fire them.
Aww.
And I was firing about 10 people a week on average. And one night I said to my husband, I think I'm becoming a mean person.
Oh my goodness.
He said, yes, you are. And I thought about that. You know, I was making a ton of money. I had my name on my parking spot. But I said, what's the use of all of that if I'm not proud of who I am? If I'm not proud of who I am, if I'm not happy with what I'm doing? And I thought, you know, I want to do something important with my life. And I couldn't think of anything more important than working with kids. But I had been a substitute teacher. When I was working my way through Yale Law School, one of my jobs was being a substitute teacher. And being a teacher is the very hardest job I have ever had. So I wanted to work with kids. I knew I wouldn't survive as a teacher. I didn't yet have a child of my own, but I did have a two-year-old cousin. And one day I was looking in a bookstore, a little teeny tiny children's bookstore, looking for a gift for my cousin. And the next thing I knew, I had an armload of picture books that I wanted to buy for myself. Picture books for two-year-olds, yeah, that I was in love with. And
Wow. All
of a sudden the idea hit me. Somebody wrote these books. Why couldn't I be one of those people? Why couldn't I be one of those people? I didn't have any idea how to write a book or how to get one published, but I thought, you know, I can figure this out. I know I can study it. I can figure it out. I can do it. And so I told my husband, I'm going to quit my job for a year, write books. If at the end of the year I've sold a book, I'll keep on doing it. If not, I'll go back to being a lawyer. And lucky for me, my husband was more realistic than I. He said, you know, why don't you do it for a year? And it doesn't really matter if you sell a book. Why don't you do it for a year? And if you love it, then keep doing it. And I said, yeah. I figured I'd sell a book by the end of the year.
Well, of course.
And the next year, I had a stack of rejection letters from publishers, over two dozen letters high. Dear author, form letters.
Right.
Regret to inform you, your book's not right for us. I felt like a failure. I almost went back to being a lawyer. But I remembered what my husband had said way back when, the night before I quit my law job. He said, it doesn't matter if you get published. If you love doing it, then keep on doing it. And I did love writing. I do love writing. So I kept on doing it. And 6 months past my deadline, a year and a half after I got started, my first book, Good Luck Gold, was sold.
Wow. Now, as I recall, you also took a poetry writing workshop or class because you felt that, not because you wanted to write poetry, not because you felt like being a poet, but because you thought that might help you with your books. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. I took a one day, well, first, when I quit, I wanted to write picture books. I wanted to write The Next Goodnight Moon. I had no, it never even crossed my mind to write poetry. And actually, in fact, oh, this is a terrible thing to say, but starting around fourth grade, I decided I hated poetry.
Oh.
Now, in all fairness to poetry, I think I hated poetry homework. I think I hated memorizing poems. I hated picking poems apart, trying to find the true meaning. I think that's what I hated, but I thought I hated poetry. So it never occurred to me to quit my job and write poems. But I was at a one-day seminar, one of those everything you need to know to write a children's book and sell it. And I was there not to learn how to write. I was there to learn how to sell. I was there to listen to the editor speak at the end of the day about how she went about choosing books. Mm-hmm. And right before lunch, Myra Cohn Livingston got up to read. I had no idea who she was. Myra Cohn Livingston, the name meant nothing to me. She got up, she said she was the author of over 80 books of poetry. And I thought, oh no, poetry. I started doodling, looking out the window, you know, I'm not really paying attention. And she read a poem called There Was a Place from a book by the same name, There Was a Place. It's now out of print, mm-hmm. but you can get it at a library. And the poem goes like this. There was a place we'd always walk, look at the sky, have a long talk, sit on a bench, drink a few Cokes, listen to Dad telling some jokes. Now the sky's dark, can't see his face, can't hear the jokes. There was a place. And when I heard that last stanza, there was a place, it made me think about my grandmother and how she looked in her hospital bed when she was dying and how we had a place where we would sit and she would talk to me. And I started blinking back tears and I thought, wow, that little poem can make me feel so much inside. There's something I can learn from that woman. So I didn't want to learn poetry.
Right.
And I didn't sign up to take Myra's class right away, but 24 rejection letters later, I decided, you know, maybe I did need to learn to write for children. Maybe there was something different about writing for children. And maybe if I learned about rhyme and rhythm and repetition, those poetic devices, then maybe I could write the next Goodnight Moon. So I signed up for Myra's beginning poetry class with no intention of writing poems, except to make my regular writing, my prose writing, better. And I took her class, I started, you know, I did the homework, I turned in the thick stacks of poems, and the next thing I knew, I loved poetry. It was a wonderful accident.
I told you, that's such a wonderful story. And I feel the same way about that poem. Every time I hear you tell that story and recite that poem, it always gets me. It's just marvelous. So how's the next Goodnight Moon coming along?
Oh, you didn't realize I actually wrote that like 10 years ago. Did you miss that?
I missed that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot. My book, let's see, which one was it? It was Buzz.
Buzz
was the next Goodnight Moon.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, so you know, when it comes to your poetry, something that strikes me is that, you know, when I look at other poetry collections, they tend to be on more ordinary themes. You know, a collection of, say, funny poems or a collection of poems about this or that. But when I look at your poetry collections, they tend to be a little more unusual. I mean, in addition to your autobiographical poems, you've written a book of poems about yoga, a book of poems about learning to drive,
right.
A book of poems about superstitions. And I'm really curious, how do you go about choosing your topics, your subjects? You know, how do you choose a theme for a collection like this?
Well, you know, that's half the fun is choosing the theme. But in the old days, we didn't need to choose themes because back when Good Luck Gold was published, which was, you know, something like 18 years ago now, mm-hmm. 17 years ago, back when Good Luck Gold was published, poets were not necessarily producing themed collections of work. You could just write about anything, lots of anythings, and stick them into a book, and it'd just be a hodgepodge of poems about whatever, and that was fine. People would buy that. Publishers would buy that. And same thing for when A Suitcase of Seaweed came out, that also was in the Anything Goes days, where you didn't have to have a theme. I chose to write a themed collection for my third book. That was The Rainbow Hand, Poems About Mothers and Children, mm-hmm. because my son was then, oh, when I started that book, he was then 3 years old. He was 3 years old, and all of a sudden it hit me. Oh my gosh, my mother worked so hard to raise me. And so, you know, I hadn't really realized how hard it was to be a mother. How hard could it be to be a mother? It is really hard. And I realized that when he was three, and I said, you know, my next book has to be a tribute to what mothers do, a tribute to the mother-child relationship. So that's why I wrote The Rainbow Hand, Poems About Mothers and Children. Mm-hmm. And then having done that, I said, well, you know, I really need to write a book as a gift for my father. And I thought about the special times we had, and the most special times were really in the car when he was teaching me how to drive, right. And I was so nervous. And so he would sort of, you know, tell me these stories about his childhood, some stories that I had never heard before, just to calm me down. And I loved those stories. And so I put a few of them into Behind the Wheel, and I decided to make that whole book a tribute to my dad, because he's the one who taught me to drive. But also, when I was in college, I did some tutoring in of kids in juvie, and they all wanted to read the driver's handbook, right? They didn't want to read novels. They didn't want to read great literature. They only wanted to read something about driving. And so that's why I thought, well, you know, this book for my dad can be poems about driving. And after that, we entered this time in publishing history where you really had to have a theme if you were going to sell a book, if a publisher was going to buy your book. And so then I started having different various themes, including some kind of oddball themes like superstitions.
I was going to say, you seem busier than ever these days, and I'd like to talk about some of your new projects, including your Poetry Tag Time series and the new one, Gift Tag.
Yeah. Well, we all are busier than ever nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And but one of the reasons why I think it's so neat that Sylvia Vardell and I have been working on these Poetry Tag Time books is that you never know when you're going to have a down moment. You might be running all day long, and then all of a sudden you have an enforced downtime moment when you're standing in line at the post office. You have nothing to do. It's not exactly an enjoyable moment. You're standing there in line. The line is not moving. And what can you do? Well, if you have a phone that has the Kindle app on it,
right.
you can get one of our poetry books and start reading poems. And the next thing you know, you're going to be up at the front of the line. Or if you're there and you're a kid and your mom has a phone, you could say to your mom, hey, can I read some poems on your phone? And you can read them out loud, and everyone in the post office will love you because you will make the wait bearable for everyone, right?
Right.
I
or
so cool.
If you're a kid and you have an iPod Touch and you have the Kindle app on your iPod Touch, you can read these fun poems on your iPod while you're in the back of the car on your way to soccer practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about each of the, so these books are only ebooks, right? They're available for Kindle and Nook. And I think, for the Apple iBooks as well. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the series and how it came about and what the difference is between these books and maybe what you have planned for the future?
Okay. Very good. Well, these books, as you mentioned, the Poetry Tag Time books are ebooks only. They're what we call born digital books. And we came up with this idea because we wanted more people to be able to afford poetry. Most poetry books cost, you know, $16, $17, $18, which is a lot of money. You know, it's definitely worth it, but it's a lot of money.
Right.
And so what do you do if you have $3 to spend on a book, and that's it, and you want to read some poetry? Well, there are lots of free websites like yours, poetryforkids.com, mm-hmm. where you can find really, really great poems. Or we wanted to make poetry an impulse buy. We wanted somebody to say, yeah, let me just see what this is about and give it a try. Can I read actually a couple of poems from those anthologies?
Absolutely. I was going to ask you to, but you beat me to it. Please, go right ahead. I'd be honored to hear some of your poetry.
Interviewed by the interviewee.
Are,
bring this a little bit?
Yeah, we're turning the tables here. So are these, now, are these poems your poems, or are these poems by other authors?
Well, in the Poetry Tag Time series, which is made up of three books, Poetry Tag Time was the first one, P-Tag is the second one, and Gift Tag is the brand new one that, that just came out. In those books, there are poems by dozens of poets, and I just happen to be one of them.
Right.
But my poems are not the best poems in those books. So I want to read what I think are the are some of the best poems in those books, okay?
All right.
So here's one. It's by my friend April Wayland, April Halperin Wayland. She has a great website where you can get all kinds of ideas on where to get published if you're a young writer, aprilwayland.com.
Okay.
That's W-A-Y-L-A-N-D. And she has a poem called World Wide Wag. And what I really love about this poem is that the Kindle is a what I like to call a 21st century technology, and this is a 21st century poem. You would not find this poem in any book from 10 years ago. It's called World Wide Wag. If you were a dog, if you were asleep, if your tail made a sweep of the floor like a broom, if your big goofy paws were seen racing on air, chasing rascally cats whose claws clicked on the stairs, if your eyes were shut tightly, if you howled politely, if your rump gave a wiggle, if I choked back a giggle, if I put you on YouTube, would you be embarrassed if puppies with laptops could see you in Paris? Do you like that?
I do, I do. And it's wonderful to hear not only the way she puts her words together and makes these wonderful rhymes, but to hear, you know, new technology that, that children take for granted, put into the poems of today.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I'm reading that poem, and my dog, who is outside in the rain, is giving me a dirty look. So I'm going to walk my laptop over to the sliding door, open the sliding door. Nissa will say, well, it's about time. And now I'm ready to sit down again.
Okay. All right.
Should I read another one? Can I read another one?
Yes, if you would. Do you have something from Gift Tag, perhaps, that you can read?
I do. From Gift Tag, you know, I think I want to read not just a poem, but a note that precedes the poem. Because one of the things that we were doing in these Poetry Tag Time books is having the poet talk about the inspiration for the poem and then have the poem, okay?
Okay.
So actually, in Gift Tag, we first had the poet pick a picture that Sylvia Bardell, my collaborator, had taken. Then they wrote about the thoughts that popped into their mind when they saw the picture, and then they wrote. Then their poem appears. So
okay.
The picture was a picture of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Joan Bransfield Graham picked that picture of flowers, and then she wrote this little piece, and this little piece goes like this. Our neighbor had a greenhouse in her backyard and grew orchids. I was about 4 years old and wanted to buy one for my mother for Christmas. Rosalind told me to come by to choose one, and this is what happened. Gift for My Mother by Joan Bransfield Graham. And she's the author of a wonderful book called Splish Splash, Concrete Poems. Gift for My Mother. Steamy greenhouse, moss curling in corkscrews. I choose an orchid, plush with purple, carry it like a treasure into my neighbor's house, empty my pockets on her table. Do I have enough? Taking only the pennies, she says, it's just right. So I think that poem really, really talks about the spirit of the holidays in a really great way. That's in Gift Tag.
It does. That's wonderful. So now the Poetry Tag Time series are ebooks only, and you've also recently published one more ebook, your book Once Upon a Tiger.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is Do I have this right? New Beginnings. But you tell me.
Okay. Once Upon a Tiger, New Beginnings for Endangered Animals. And I wrote this because I wanted to bring attention to the fact that we have endangered species that might not be around with us for very long, and we really need to do something about it. And I put some nonfiction notes at the back of this book, and those nonfiction notes are, you know, pretty matter of fact, and actually talk about how few of some species we have. But I didn't want the book as a whole to be depressing. I wanted it to be something that got kids wondering about these animals and falling in love with these animals and wanting to do something good for them. Like, for instance, for this book, I'm donating my royalties to animal charities. And so so with the thought that I didn't want this book to be depressing, I thought maybe I'll put in Pourquoi-style poems where I'm wondering, how did this animal come to be? Why did this animal get to be this way? Kind of like you have a poem on your website, on your Poetry for Kids website, called Polar Bowling, right?
Yes.
I love that poem about how the polar bears were using snowballs as bowling balls and using penguins as bowling pins, right?
That's right, yep.
Right? And the penguins got tired of being knocked down, so that's why they moved to a whole other continent.
Right.
So I love that poem. These are the same kind of idea, just silly musings, wondering how did this animal come to be this way? And I'll give you a choice. You want me to read the elephant one or the leatherback turtle?
Well, I was going to ask, because so far you've read three poems and none of them were yours, so I got to get at least one of yours.
These poems are mine. So would you like the elephant or the leatherback turtle?
I like elephants. Let's do the elephant.
Okay, here's Asian elephant. Totally ridiculous, which is usually not the way I write, so this is a real departure for me. Okay. Elephant chose to play with his nose, a hose of a nose which he used to soak poor little monkey who coughed and choked and decided to play a trick on him. While elephant dozed, monkey climbed in, into his trunk, which shrunk and shrunk. What bad luck. Monkey was stuck in an elephant's nose, and that's where he stayed, which elephant found rather handy. He once was a klutz. Now he can crack a nose full of nuts, scratch an itch, draw with sticks, pinch ripe mangoes wherever he goes. He loves those fingers in his nose. So that was, you know, trying to explain how an elephant got a nose that has
a prehensile nose.
So like fingers, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's as good an explanation that I've heard anywhere.
You don't think that's the real way it happened?
I'm not saying it's not.
Somehow, I have a feeling some of your listeners will disagree.
Who knows? You know, and I want to say, I think your book would be an excellent pairing with Pat Lewis's book Swan Song, which is Poems of Extinction. Now that, if you haven't, I don't know, have you read Swan Song by chance?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Okay, so you know that. Now that is a sad book. It's a beautiful book, but it's sad because all of the animals in that book are now extinct, and it's mainly the doing of man. And so, you know, to pair that with a book of poems about animals that are not extinct and that we have a chance to do something about, I think is could be a terrific reading.
Yeah, and you know, the title animal is the tiger, Once Upon a Tiger, and it is unbelievable to me that actually I've read reports that in 20 years there might not be any tigers in the wild. Can you imagine? 20
wow.
years from now, zero tigers in the world unless something is done. Just unbelievable.
Well, you're doing your part, and Hopefully, more people, when they read your book, will do their part as well.
Well, you know, if they buy Once Upon a Tiger, Once Upon a Tiger is only $3.99, but I am donating my royalties, so that's they are doing something when they buy my book.
And I should say that it's not like your ordinary ebook, because this is not just text, but it is a beautifully illustrated ebook. Is that right?
Right. It's illustrated by Slajana. Slujana Vasic, who is an artist from Serbia, and she has so much personality in her art. On the Kindle, you can see it in black and white only, but if you go to our website for the book, which is onceuponatiger.com, you can see her art in full color, and it's really great. Also, actually, for your listeners, onceuponatiger.com, that's where you would go if you want to learn about the poetry contest. If you're a kid and you want to write a poem about endangered animals and send it to us, you can find that information at our website. And actually, Ken, I have to thank you because one of the kids who was one of our winners in April, who had his poem posted to our website, he found out about our contest through your site. And he lives in Sri Lanka or... We got entries from all over the world, Sri Lanka, Costa Rica, Singapore, all over the world, and it was really, really exciting. But I have to thank you because I'm pretty sure that some of the young poets told me that they heard about our contest from you.
Well, if you have any other contests or, you know, when this one comes up again, please let me know, and I'll be sure to announce it on my website to my fans.
Okay.
So you've got onceuponatiger.com for this book. You've also got a website for Poetry Tag Time. That's poetrytagtime.com. And, of course, if anybody wants to find out more about you, they can just go to your main website, which is janetwong.com. Are there any I'm missing?
Just the best children's compilation site, poetryforkids.com.
Oh, right.
Oh, but I didn't have anything to do with that.
Oh, well, listen, Janet, it has been so wonderful to have a chance to talk with you today. It's nice to catch up with you, and I really appreciate you taking the time for this interview.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ken.
All right. Well, you do have a wonderful day, Janet. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This has been Ken Nevin with PoetryForKids.com interviewing children's author Janet Wong. The music today was provided by Kevin MacLeod.